I guess I should be consistent. We'll say good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Good afternoon. May it please the Court, Christy J. Dowdy, Whittington Alger, on behalf of the defendant appellees, cross-appellants, General Motors, LLC, and Delaware Motor Sales, Inc., trading as Delaware Cadillac. As Your Honors are aware, a motion pro hoc vice was filed, and the order was entered on April 22, 2010, granting the admission pro hoc vice of Polly Philippi. Ms. Philippi is a member in good standing of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and the state of New Jersey. And if I may introduce her at this point, Your Honors.
Welcome to the Court.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
May it please the Court. Good afternoon, Your Honors. I would like to start with the basic issues in the case. The issues are, first, when the Lemon Law accrues for purposes of the statute of limitations, when the dealer's labor warranty begins to run under the statute of limitations, and whether it is a UCC or a common law or contract warranty, and third, whether the Superior Court abused its discretion in deciding not to order refund of the purchase price when the settlement was declared unenforceable and the car could not be returned to Mr. Stenta. This case asks, in the first instance, to determine when a cause of action accrues under the Delaware Lemon Law for the purposes of determining the statute of limitations. Plaintiff Henry Stenta contends that it's a jury question in the circumstances of this case, which do not fall under the presumption section of the Lemon Law. The Lemon Law at Section 5002 creates duties that must be violated before a Lemon Law cause of action can accrue. The first of these duties is on the plaintiff, and it is to notify the dealer as the manufacturer's representative that there is a problem that needs to be repaired, and that must occur within the first year after the purchase of the vehicle.
Well, what is the actual wrong? Isn't the actual wrong the breach of the express warranty?
I think that that would be true under the Uniform Commercial Code, but under the Lemon Law, I think the actual wrong is failing to correct the Lemon Law problem within a reasonable number of attempts or a reasonable amount of time. For that is the duty that's imposed statutorily by Section 5002.
But that's the remedy for the breach of the warranty.
The remedy would be in Section 5003, essentially revocation of acceptance by canceling the sale or replacing the product that couldn't be repaired in a reasonable number of attempts or a reasonable amount of time.
But overarching, doesn't the Lemon Law basically provide a remedy for the breach of an express warranty?
Overarching, that it does. But it's the same remedy that's available under the Uniform Commercial Code. The Lemon Law adds some consumer-favorable standards, such as the bright line standard if the presumption applies of if it's out of service 30 days during the first year or if it's subject to repair four times in the first year, that is presumed to be a reasonable opportunity to repair, a question that's not answered under the Uniform Commercial Code. It also allows other remedies, and we think the statute of limitations is another amelioration, but, for example, attorney's fees are not directly recoverable under the Uniform Commercial Code. So overarching, I think it is a statute that provides amelioration of the remedies that are available under the Uniform Commercial Code by answering some questions that are not addressed by the Uniform Commercial Code. And I think in reading the Lemon Law, it would be a mistake not to consider some of the law that's developed under the Uniform Commercial Code. For example, in a revocation of acceptance case, there must be notice of the revocation. That's analogous to the notice requirements of the Lemon Law, and it has to recur in a reasonable time after discovery of the problem. But when, in order to get to cancel a sale under the Uniform Commercial Code by revocation of acceptance, one must prove that the warranty has failed of its essential purpose, and that's the situation that the Lemon Law directly addresses. that kind of a situation. In that case, the consumer must give the manufacturer through its dealer a reasonable opportunity to make repairs, because that's the purpose of the warranty, to give the manufacturer a reasonable opportunity to deliver conforming goods. And the remedy for the purpose for the consumer is to obtain conforming goods within a reasonable amount of time.
So is it the Lemon Law allows a curing of the breach? Is that
Yes, it does. And when the breach can't be cured, just as under the Uniform Commercial Code, the remedy, the warranty fails of its essential purpose, and all the remedies that are available under the Uniform Commercial Code, which include cancellation of the sale and return of the purchase price, are available. The Lemon Law adheres to that in different terminology and under different statutory duties, but in addition, it also allows an additional remedy that's usually a negotiated remedy, and that is replacement of the vehicle with a new vehicle, which is not something that's directly available under the Lemon Law.
Well, can I ask you, if I understand your argument on this point, that the question of when the statute of limitations would run should be a jury question, because the jury should determine what a, quote, reasonable amount of time is under the Lemon Law? Is that
Yes, that's it.
Okay. And if I understand the facts correctly, your client took the car in four times in the first year for, you know, normal things, but at each time, apparently, he complained about this problem, right?
Yes. Okay. However, the reason that that a jury should decide whether they count as repair opportunities is because each time that he took it in after the date of sale, he took it into a while-you-wait, next-in-line oil change service. So the repair opportunity on each of those occasions was for the oil change and not for addressing this problem. Now, the dealer should have and could have made an appointment for him to bring it back after hearing those complaints, but the dealers are set up so that they have appointments for addressing things other than oil changes on the while-you-wait basis.
Okay, well, let's look at a hypothetical then. Your client buys a car on day one and immediately notices a significant problem, if we want to call this a significant problem, and brings it to the attention of the dealer, who makes an effort to repair it unsuccessfully. And then the purchaser decides, this is continuing to be a really serious problem for me, but I'm going to wait a couple of years and see if maybe it gets better on its own somehow. So I'm not going to actually bring up the problem again for another 2 years. Are you saying that such a consumer gets the benefit of taking his or her own sweet time to even bring the problem to the attention of the dealer?
That's not precisely what I'm saying, Your Honor.
No, but I'm asking you, in that hypothetical, would the purchaser be able to say, well, you didn't have a reasonable opportunity to make the repair because I didn't bring it to your attention again for another two or three years. So I get 3 years from the time I brought it to your attention the second time.
No, I don't think so, Your Honor. I don't think that would be covered by the Lemon Law. The Lemon Law, first of all, in the first instance, requires that it be reported immediately as part of your hypothetical, but then it has to be pursued. And I think that the statute has set kind of a public policy standard that there has to be at least four repair attempts, whether it's in the first year or in subsequent years, because Section 5002 says even if the repair attempts take longer than 1 year, it would still be a jury question, but it would not be one that would be favorable to the consumer because they had not taken it back four times under the hypothetical that you just set out.
Well, but you're saying even though your client did take it back four times, because your client didn't say, put it in the other part of the shop, I'm here for an oil change, but you really have to take care of this other matter too, that your client gets the benefit of having it both ways. You know, that first he's given the notice, so to speak, four times, but then he's able to claim, but you didn't have a reasonable opportunity to repair until some years later. How is that a question that any rational juror could find in your favor?
Well, I think a juror could say that these evaluate oil changes were not repair opportunities for the smell, and that
in which case he didn't comply with the lemon law, did he?
Well, he did. He did. He provided notice during the first year, and that's all that has to be accomplished in the first year. After that, but some problems, frankly, take longer than a year to develop in lemon law cases that I'm aware of. And as long as they're within the statute of limitations when they're matured, they can be brought under Delaware law. The rebuttable presumption does not apply in this case. And recently, in Murray v. Suzuki, Superior Court in that case held that plaintiffs don't need to rely on the presumption that's created because it is limited to what happens during the first year. The presumption is if there's four repair attempts in the first year or 30 days out of service in the first year, there is a presumption that the manufacturer has a reasonable opportunity to make repairs. But as in that case and in this case, the facts did not fit within that presumption, and the lemon law still applies. It just does not get the benefit of that presumption. If the manufacturer does cure the problem in 1 year or 30 days out of service or in four repair attempts or 30 days probably at most any time, then the lemon law cause of action cannot be brought. I think Judge Del Pesco in the Calvert case followed the a decision from Pennsylvania saying that after if it's cured, then it the lemon law cause of action does not accrue. The Delaware's limitation of action section gives 3 years from the accrual of it, and the accrual does not occur until all the elements necessary to bring the action have been accomplished, and that would be the reasonableness of the opportunity for the repair. Under the Uniform Commercial Code, that time is allowed to be considered in light of the repair attempts that are being made by the dealer. I think in the Gershman case, there was a revocation of acceptance more than 2 years and 18,000 miles or more after the problem was first reported, and that was held to be a jury question that the jury could properly find notice was seasonably given under the Uniform Commercial Code. That case was not decided under the lemon law, but the parallels as to the reasonableness of time being a jury question are quite parallel to the lemon law and the position we're taking in this case.
I have another question off this topic. Your client ultimately received the entire purchase price back.
That's correct.
7 years after he bought the car.
Yes, Your Honor.
What more is your client looking for?
Well, at this point, attorney's fees under the lemon law, and as against the dealer, in addition to the actual damages, there would be triple damages under the Elder Victims Enhanced Penalty Act. And costs.
Is the lemon law, in reference to the Pennsylvania U.S. District Court case, I think your position is, well, that's Pennsylvania law. Is the Delaware statute and the Pennsylvania statute identical? Is there a legislative history that shows that Delaware adopted the Pennsylvania version?
They are not quite identical. Pennsylvania allows an automobile to be returned to the manufacturer for the lemon law remedies after only three repair attempts. And Pennsylvania does not have a statute of limitations statute similar to our 8106, the three-year statute for violations of statute. Lemon law problem to the dealer, since the dealer under the lemon law or under the UCC would be offered a reasonable opportunity to make repairs, and in Delaware that would be 4 repair attempts or 30 days out of service. If it was fixed within that time frame or those constraints, there would be no lemon law action.
But the other side argues, I believe, that even if your position on that we should interpret it consistent with the Pennsylvania case, that you still lose because of no reasonable juror could find in your favor given the actual repair history here.
We disagree because the issues should be jury issues for the reasons I was discussing with Justice Berger, that the oil changes might constitute notice during the first year, but they were not repair opportunities for the stench in the first year.
Well, what's the date you assert the statute of limitations began to run?
I assert that it was a jury question, but that it would be...
Well, you're going to make an argument to the jury if you have the opportunity, aren't you?
Yes.
Are you going to give them choices, or are you going to say, here's the date?
It would be the fourth, after the fourth repair opportunity that's noted in a repair invoice, which I believe is about a month after the suit was filed in this case, at the earliest.
So that's the rule of law you're advocating, that whenever the fourth opportunity is unsuccessful, the statute of limitations begins to run.
It would have to be 4 repair opportunities have to be given under the Lemon Law, and it has to be, there has to be proof that it's not repaired after the fourth repair attempt before there's a violation of the Lemon Law. Yes.
So then there's really not a jury question. We just look in every case and see when the fourth opportunity was taken and it was unsuccessful.
In some cases that may be true, and certainly if it occurs during the first year, that's more likely to be the case. But in this case, it's ambiguous whether the oil changes were repair opportunities for the smell. I think it still devolves back to a jury question.
Right, you're using your rebuttal time. Would you like to save that?
Yeah, I still would like to save the 3 minutes. Thank you, Your Honors.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court, my name is Polly Phillippe, and I'm here today representing the interests of General Motors, LLC, and Delaware Cadillac. The issue in the case is when a cause of action accrues for purposes of the 3-year statute of limitations under 8106 for the Delaware Lemon Law. As the Court is aware, 8106 applies to statutory causes of action that do not provide a limitation period within the statute itself. But what the Court and what the Delaware courts have traditionally done is look at it within the context of the actual statute itself. So I think it makes sense to look at it within the context of the actual Lemon Law itself. In order for the Lemon Law litigation to be fair, it's critical for all the parties to have and to know when the statute of limitation begins to run. The Pender decision has done that. It's done exactly that. What it does is it gives certainty to both a manufacturer and to a consumer to know when the statute of limitations begins to run. That is when the plaintiff has notice that there's a nonconformity. And then when they take the car in and they have up to a year with owners of the first year of ownership or the warranty period, whichever is shorter, they then have noticed that their car potentially has a problem and that they must do what's necessary to then explore the situation and find out whether or not the car actually does have a problem, and to then go on to see whether or not the elements of their proof of Lemon Law violation actually exist.
Well, doesn't that put a plaintiff in the potential position of, let's say, 6 months after buying the car, there's some sort of knocking sound, and it's not because of the wrong gas, and person takes it in, and so it has been reported, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
So the statute of limitations starts to run.
That's correct.
According to tender and according to you. And let's say that the dealer looks at it that time and says, well, you know, we think we took care of it, and several months later the knocking comes back. So what I'm getting at is that a plaintiff could be in a position under your formulation where the three-year statute of limitations will run out before four attempts to repair the problem have been undertaken. And so what, is a plaintiff supposed to file a lemon law suit before the end of 3 years and then say, I'll amend it after the fourth time?
What I think that the plaintiff has an obligation to do then is if the problem stops after the manifestation of the knocking during the first year of ownership, then under what the legislature has said, then there's not a nonconformity that's been subject to repair more than four times. I mean, that's what the actual law states. What they may then is choose to, if it then comes back after the first year, some of the courts have related it back to the first cause of action,
okay,
or they could file a breach of warranty case.
Well, let me modify my question to conform to the law. Assuming hypothetically that there's this knocking sound and he brings it in, or the plaintiff brings it in, and the dealer makes it slightly less of a knocking sound, but it's still knocking, okay? So the problem has not been resolved, but it has been abated a little bit. And the purchaser says, well, it's a little bit better. I'm going to drive the car and see whether maybe now it'll just go away. Doesn't just go away and goes through the process. Again, aren't you putting a plaintiff in a position where before four attempts to repair have occurred, the statute of limitations is about to run?
What will happen is the plaintiff under the law has an obligation to present it to the manufacturer for repair. And the law itself states that a plaintiff has an obligation and that the manufacturer has up to four times. The plaintiff can't sit on their hands and not bring the car in if a problem still exists, because then the plaintiff controls when the statute of limitation actually would, under plaintiff's theory, the plaintiff would control when the statute runs. If the plaintiff has a problem and it's a nonconformity, the law requires, as it's enacted, to present the vehicle for repair. They are not, under the rules, under the law, permitted to sit on their hands and let it go.
What if the manufacturer does?
I'm sorry?
What if the manufacturer does and stretches it out over a three-year period?
What I think you have is that if the car, for example, is brought in, and what I think you're looking at is, I think the question goes to, has the plaintiff met their proofs in terms of proving their lemon law case? Whether or not what the manufacturer does or doesn't do, whether it's a repair attempt or not, those go to the elements of the proof. That's a different thing than what I think we're dealing with here. I think we're dealing with, when does the statute of limitations begin? And that's the question before the court,
hypothetically, let's assume it for whatever reason, and it could be legitimate reasons, we're getting parts from somewhere in the Far East or whatever.
Right.
But the four repair attempts, let's assume that exceeds 3 years beyond the actual notice.
Okay.
When does the claim is then brought after the four repair attempts, which apparently the law requires. So is the action barred by the statute of limitations?
Okay. What I think happens in that case, your question I think goes to, does the plaintiff meet its burden of proof under that scenario? What I think Pender does is say, the plaintiff has knowledge upon the first nonconformity, when he realizes that there's a nonconformity with the vehicle, to then take corrective action and bring the car in. Whether or not there was a breach or a violation of the lemon law goes to all of those things that the court says, whether or not it was a delay in the repair, whether or not the part wasn't available. Those are all proofs go to the actual claim, but it doesn't relate to the statute of limitations. What we're dealing with specifically here.
So you have to file suit before you can prove your claim.
No, I think you have notice that your claim begins. It doesn't say you have to bring it on immediately, but you have 3 years from the time that you have notice of a potent, of the nonconformity. You don't have to file it immediately. You have 3 years from that time. And in this particular case, certainly going to the factual situation, both in the deposition and the statute of the stipulation of fact, plaintiff brought it in numerous times and complained of this musty smell.
But what you're avoiding an answer to, or giving us an answer, is that it is not out of the question that a buyer could find a problem with a car, report it, the dealer could be trying to repair it, and for a variety of reasons, it takes more than 3 years from the date on which the problem was first identified before the fourth repair attempt is made, which leaves the plaintiff, at least as we understand it, in a position of having to file a suit before his claim has ripened because he can't prove yet that there were four repair attempts that failed. Okay.
The courts have actually looked to and said that four is a presumption. It is not necessarily an absolute requirement. And there's specific case law that states, and it's addressed in my brief, that four is not an absolute magic number, that the courts have held that there's a Lemon Law violation even before four. That's a presumption language. It's not necessarily means that they have to have four. The courts have recognized that people have had a Lemon Law violation before four repair attempts. What I think is important that Pender and the trial judge in this particular case have done is they followed consistently the idea that somebody has to have notice. And the notice that you have is if you have a presumption, if you have a nonconformity, you take it in. And that's when you start to realize, I may have a potential claim.
Why shouldn't we follow Lowe versus Volkswagen of America?
Because it's unworkable as it stands. If you look at the decision in Lowe, the courts there say, I can't reach a decision because the records are not clear whether or not a repair attempt was actually took place. That's a federal court decision interpreting Pennsylvania law, and the questions of whether or not there was an actual repair attempt actually, frankly, become a nightmare because it's whether or not the car, say, a part was not available, whether or not there was actually a repair attempt. It's really not a definitive, it doesn't give any definitive guidance to a plaintiff that their cause of action has started to run when you use the law as it's applied in Lowe.
Well,
and rather, Pender
problem,
is.
Shouldn't the legislature fix it? I mean, the legislature has put in this reasonable term of having these repairs done, a reasonable period. The legislature could be more concrete if that's the way it should be.
Well, I think that if you use plaintiff's approach, it's unwieldy, it's unmanageable. Lowe does not give any definition to anyone. In the Lemon Law litigation. On the other hand, Pender does specifically address the situation that we're faced with the law not stating a statute of limitations, and it comes with a workable, logical way to start when the period should start to run.
Well, there's another alternative then, if we just want to be workable and logical, and run it from the date of sale.
And frankly, the UCC and a breach of warranty claim could also have followed that approach, sir. And so that when you have a breach of warranty claim or a UCC violation, that's what they do. They've implemented a four-year from the date of delivery. That's what they've done.
But why shouldn't we use that date?
Well, that could be utilized. But what I think could happen here is that that could be utilized, but the court in Pender decided not to do that. I think one of the things that says to me is that if you look at the Lemon Law, the plaintiff has to present the vehicle for a repair, for a nonconformity. And if a manufacturer has to buy back a car, there's a provision that there's a mileage offset. That mileage offset begins after the report of the first nonconformity. Before that time, the plaintiff was driving a car with no problems. The statute of limitations, as it's been set forth in Pender, follows that reasoning. What happens is that it starts to run statute of limitations at that same time when the nonconformity is reported, and the plaintiff has noticed that they have a problem. So it's consistent with the terms of how the Lemon Law is really constructed. The other thing, that under the Lemon Law, the actual remedy of a buyback is a more expensive remedy than what would be found in a breach of warranty case. Breach of warranty case, the difference is the difference in value at the time and place of delivery. That's the standard for a breach of warranty case. Rather, Lemon Law, you are faced with a larger cost as a manufacturer, and frankly, I think part of the reasoning in Penders goes to, because of that, it's a depreciating asset. It makes the car is a depreciating asset. It makes sense to have a date certain for when the statute runs and have the plaintiff not sit on their hands in terms of presenting the car in for a repair and to be remedied. And that's specifically, I think, part of the statute. Even if this court would find that the plaintiff's approach is what they want to follow, which I don't think is correct, by the plaintiff's own testimony, and that's replete through the record, and it's supported both in sworn deposition testimony, sworn stipulation of fact, in the motion for summary judgment response, it's really replete throughout the record in this case. The plaintiff is by his own testimony, and it's not disputed by the plaintiff, that the smell existed when he took possession of the car, and that was back in July 28th of 2000, and that he complained about it each time he took it in for servicing. And frankly, the trial judge does an excellent job of making that analysis in terms of when the statute should run, based on if you would follow plaintiff's reasoning on page 25 of the trial court's brief. But each time he took it in, that's undisputed. And those he complained of it on each and every occasion is his testimony. They are all binding judicial admissions. All of those, what's in the record from the plaintiff in terms of his brief, the motion for summary judgment respond, those are all judicial admissions. The trial court was reasonable to rely on those, and they must be given a conclusive effect. Also, from the scope of review from this honorable court, you should accept the factual findings of the trial court unless they are clearly wrong. And if you look at the record in this case, it is replete with references and admissions that, in fact, each time he took it in, he complained of the smell
to
the dealership.
But opposing counsel said that although he did complain of the smell, those weren't opportunities for repair. Okay.
What frankly happened is that on the first time he complained of the smell, there was, I think one of the things that your question does is it goes to how unworkable plaintiff's theory of motion of statute of limitations really is. You come down to a very unquestionable thing about is it a repair or not. That's one of the things I think is presented by plaintiff's approach to the statute of limitations. To address specifically your question, on the first day that he took possession of the vehicle, the dealership did spray and did try to
right, that
clean.
Was number one.
Right. And so with regard to the others, if he complained about it, and under the Lemon Law, he complained about it, but the dealership didn't take any corrective action, then I think a reasonable argument could be made that he presented it for repair and that he has done what he needs to do under the Lemon Law. I think that with regard...
So if someone presents a vehicle for repair and the manufacturer or the dealer says, we're not doing it, you bought it, keep it. Does he have to bring it in four times, or?
Well, first, I think they have a breach of warranty claim then because the dealership has failed to honor its warranty of it has an obligation to perform a repair. Under the Lemon Law, if the plaintiff has notice that the dealership refuses to work on it, say the dealership refuses to work on it because it's a normal operating condition, then you have a question about the plaintiff can continue to proceed to present it to the dealership because they still feel it's a nonconformity. And you have the question, and frankly, it's unworkable again. Are those repair attempts or not? And that's what you'd be faced with dealing with plaintiff's approach to whether or not something's repaired based on his how he'd like you to apply it. Labor warranties.
Can a refusal to work on it be inferred from this record?
From this record?
Yeah.
I don't believe that that's the case. I don't think that's the question before the court presently. I think that he's complained about it each time he says that he complained about it. I don't think there's any evidence anywhere that anybody refused to work on this vehicle or the smell. Labor warranties quickly. They relied on plaintiff's representations that they're good, that they're actually a breach of our contracts of mixed goods and services. They're covered by the UCC, and that they frankly should be covered, or the statute of limitations which applies is for Magnuson Moss, and it's 4 years from the tender of delivery.
I want to make sure that the record is clear on this. With respect to your cross appeal,
yes, ma'am.
Is it correct that if the court affirms the trial court, you withdraw your cross appeal?
Yes, ma'am. That is correct. We have an interest in the finality of the litigation.
But I want to make sure I understand the implications of that. Mr. Curtin's client has a check or the proceeds in excess of $41,000, and by withdrawing your cross appeal, your position is he can keep the money and that's the end of the case.
Yes, sir. If the trial court's decision is affirmed and we are faced and we are truly done with this case, yes, sir, General Motors Corporation will agree to withdraw its cross appeal to recover the difference between what the car was sold for and what the plaintiff was paid. Yes, we will absolutely withdraw it if this case is done and over.
Do you have anything further?
I'm sorry?
You still have 2 minutes. Do you have anything further to say?
No, I don't.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. There's one or two things that I would like to follow up on. And first is that I'd like the court to recall when considering this case that this is a statutory consumer protection action that's remedial in nature, and therefore it justifies a broad or inclusive reading favoring consumers. Second,
doesn't the consumer have some obligation to present the problem in a meaningful way? In other words, your client's position is that when I brought the car back the second time, even though I still had a problem, I was just getting an oil change, right?
Yes.
So that didn't count. Well, if you're bringing the car in and you know there's a problem, doesn't the consumer have some obligations too in terms of bringing the matter to be repaired again? The dealer, as far as the dealer knows, on the day the car was sold, there was a problem. They sprayed it. The dealer thinks, fine, that took care of it. But your client still has a problem and then brings the car in multiple times for other matters and never says, would you please bring this to the other department to have them take care of the mold?
But, Your Honor, that's not exactly what happened. And I think our assertion that it should be a jury question is part of this. Mr. Stenta was 78 years old when he bought this car, and by the time of his deposition, he was wheelchair-bound, and he had such long prior dealings with the dealership. He bought, this was his fourth Cadillac. He expected that the same service that he had experienced over 20 or 30 years would be afforded to him, and apparently it wasn't. He did report each time that he went in that there was a smell of oil, and he was still upset about it. And he knew that he could make an appointment for the oil changes and be immediately heard or seen. And nobody pointed out to him that he would need to make an appointment to come back to have the oil changes, or instead of oil changes, have the smell addressed. Eventually, when they did look into it, they actually found mold not only in the trunk but under the glass between the glass of the dashboard and the dashboard in the foam rubber of the dashboard. So he complied with the Lemon Law duty of providing notice, and it was the obligations under the statute shift to the the manufacturer to make reasonable opportunities to repair in a reasonable number of attempts or a reasonable amount of time.
So you're saying that the actual cause of the smell was determined, and it was determined to be mold, and then the dealer didn't take care of it?
The dealer did try to take care of it, but by then, after 30 days where they ripped out the entire interior, they deodorized everything, they replaced everything but the seats, the smell came back because it had gone on for so long. And at that point, the client and his son-in-law met with General Motors and asked for the car to be repurchased, and they were denied.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The court will take this matter under advisement. We'll take a recess.